Yes. Now, one of the topics your book brings up is Einstein, and my impression of Einstein as a kid was that he was the most intelligent human that's ever existed, and that he has totally transformed physics. And then when I got a little older and I was looking at some of the history of physics, I noticed that there were other physicists such as Lorentz. They were coming up with almost the exact same theories. They just hadn't quite got there. And my impression was Einstein just happened to be in the right place at the right time and put the pieces together and then gets all the credit. You know, sort of like a football team that struggles for a long time to get the ball down to the field, and then at the 1 yard line, some new substitute comes in to replace a player, and he takes the ball over the goal line and gets all the credit, even though he did almost nothing. But your book now is making it look like Einstein truly did nothing at all. Is that a way to describe this situation?
I wouldn't say he did nothing at all, but he doesn't deserve nearly the credit he's given, and he deliberately plagiarized. The person who accomplished what you just described was Jules-Henri Poincaré, who was a French mathematician, the premier mathematician in the world. And he looked at Lorentz's physical theory and saw in it an underlying four-dimensional scheme that could explain the physical phenomenon which had not yet been explained. So he viewed time as a fourth dimension. And Einstein actually opposed the idea that time was a fourth dimension. It was Poincaré who did all the things which are attributed to Einstein in the special theory of relativity.
And you're saying that the reason Einstein gets all the credit is because he was actually a part of this Zionist movement?
Later on, yes. Initially, it was because the theory wasn't that popular. It was because German nationalists viewed Einstein as a good German and they wanted to give him credit. It was because Poincaré was a very gracious person. And it was because the German publishing houses were mostly owned by Jews and they were very tribalistic and very unfair to Poincaré. Theoretical physics wasn't that important until Einstein was made a superstar, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Oh, back in those days, they were like a fringe group, huh?
Yes, very much so. And these ideas were fringe ideas. They were not popular. It was not until 1919, when Einstein was made a superstar based on false evidence, that all this really became an issue. There were a lot of people, from 1905 onward, people were pointing out the fact that Einstein had repeated the work of these other people without giving them an attribution.
So this is like well known. It's not even a debatable issue, really, then.
Absolutely. Only dishonest people would debate it.
And then that explains why he never got the Nobel Prize for his theory of relativity.
Yes. There was a man named Philip Lehner, who may have been a crypto-Jew. Some people have said that he was of Jewish descent. But Einstein, of course, accused him of plagiarism so he could hide from the fact. Accused him of anti-Semitism so that he could hide from the fact. But Philip Lehner knew some of, I think, Sven Hayden, or what, I forget his name at the moment, but one of the Nobel Prize judges, and he let him know that Einstein had plagiarized this theory. But there were other issues with the Nobel Prize. It was not meant to be awarded for theories. It was meant to be awarded for scientific discovery so that it could promote the advancement of technological progress. So they broke all kinds of rules by trying to give Einstein the prize, but they could never resolve how to do it. So they eventually just said, we'll give it to him for his outstanding accomplishments in physics, and we'll mention the photoelectric effect.
You know, what it reminds me of is when they, after 9/11, we're told Osama bin Laden did the attack, but then you look at the FBI's most wanted list and he's listed for something else. And so here we have Einstein, supposedly the most brilliant man, creates this theory, but that's not what he's given an award for?
And he also broke the rules. He was to give a speech, and the rules held that I think the speech had to be given in Gothenburg, or in Stockholm, and he gave it in Gothenburg, one way or the other. And it had to be on that which he was awarded the prize for, but instead he gave it on the theory of relativity. So the public received the false impression that he was being given the Nobel Prize for the theory of relativity when he absolutely and specifically was not being given it for the special theory of relativity. or the theory of relativity generally.
And now in your book, you're also saying that this is partly a promotion by the Zionists to...
Absolutely. It was admitted by Einstein and his friends that they were going to call him the Jewish Newton, and that he would be a spokesman for Zionism and spread Zionist propaganda.
He has admitted this in writing, you mean?
Yes. Not only he, but many of the people around him. Justice Brandeis even said that it's a good thing that this Jew is going to come and show the rest of the world that the Jews are doing all the important things in the world.
So it was to boost their, to boost the image of Jews worldwide.
Absolutely. But you have to look on the fact that tragically Jews had always been accused of being uncreative. From ancient times, an Egyptian named Apion said that the Jews produced nothing creative. They produce no culture, they produce no science, they produce no music. And that nerve was touched again by Vishaut Bogner when he said that the Jews are completely incapable of producing high-quality literature, music, or science. And then another man named Houston Stuart Chamberlain falsely accused the Jews of being genetically unable to produce any great people on the level of Newton or Mozart or Bach or Wagner, that they could not compete in those arenas. And the Jews wanted to break that mythology, and they went overboard and pushed the idea that Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, and Albert Einstein were the greatest minds that humanity had ever produced, that they could put an end to that mythology that the Jews were incapable of producing great people.
It's funny you should mention Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud, because there's a book, The Jewish Mystique, that uses those same people as evidence of how great they are. But I mean, would most people
all
even...
contrive to confront the mythology that Jews are incapable of producing geniuses. There was a guy, I think his name was Gobineau, and he created that mythology that all great people in history had been Aryan, and that the Jews were incapable of creating great people and would have to, through theft and plagiarism, copy others. They were good copycats, but they produced no original great. And that Gobineau mythology, the Jews responded, Jewish leadership responded to it by creating an alternative mythology that they had produced the most wonderful minds that most heavily influenced the 20th century. But the thing that influenced the heaviest, the greatest influence on the 20th century was Jewish control over the mass media and politics. And both of those were results of the Rothschild fortunes, which they obtained by perpetual war and by central banking.
Now, the Nobel Prizes, from what I understand, the way they find new people for the prizes is they ask the previous winners. So if there was one Zionist who gets into this as the Nobel Prize winner, and they start asking him for suggestions on who should win, he would likely name another Zionist. And, you know, after a while, you could end up, the whole place is dominated by them. Do you see the Nobel Prizes as even being...
In some instances, they've been justified, but I think there has been unfair Jewish bias. I think there's been an unfair German bias. And I think there's been an unfair Northern European bias. It isn't only the Jews who have this elitism and prejudice. Northern Europeans have the same problem.
Well, if they're asking who to recommend, they're likely recommending
Absolutely.
People...
It's not only that, but Einstein is a classic example of Jewish tribalism, where when professorships come up, he would recommend his Jewish friends who supported his theory. And when Jewish reporters wanted to write stories about the conflicts that he entered into, they would not go to the people who were opposed to him. They would go to his Jewish friends who would lie about what was going on, deliberately lie and distort the news. And then these Jewish reporters would feel confident about lying to the public about what was going on. And it was specifically Jewish-run, Jewish-edited, Jewish-reported newspapers that defamed all of Einstein's critics as if they were anti-Semites. And many of these people were Nobel Prize-winning physicists. Philipp Lenard had won the Nobel Prize in physics, and he was Einstein's chief critic, and he's the one who prevented Einstein from getting the Nobel Prize for the theory of relativity. and the one who pushed for the idea that it should be the photoelectric effect was Osaic. And he had to fabricate it as an excuse. It was a rather minor thing, and Robert Millikan was already scheduled to win the prize for it. And they had to delay his prize, and they gave him the prize for the exact same thing the next year, and he kept his mouth shut about it, even though he said Einstein's theory was untenable.
Do you have any last suggestions for people who are going to read this book, how it might apply to them now, and what...
I don't want to give them the false impression that it's all about physics and that it's untouchable and not understandable. I'd like to let them know that the majority of the book, especially the initial chapters, are about Jewish racism, about Zionism, about Judaism. They rely only on the facts and not on my opinions, and that everything in the book is verifiable, and I suggest that people, if they are incredulous, investigate it, try to verify it, and they'll see that what I'm saying is true, and then they ought to listen to my critics and get their feedback and then arrive at their own conclusions. But I think they'll find in my book a great deal of evidence that they won't find elsewhere, and some very rare documentation, which is reproduced in my book, that they would never become aware of otherwise. And I hope it's helpful to people. And when people are told that when they say these things, but they offer up no proof, I hope that they can look to my book to find some of that proof to back up what they're claiming.
And these old newspaper articles, where did you find them? Are they still available somewhere in maybe museums or libraries?
Fortunately, a lot of them are being digitized and are searchable, but you have to know what to look for. And newspaper articles often reference other newspaper articles, and in books, many people who have been criticized or smeared complain about certain newspapers or certain articles which smeared them. And it's a process of going through all that to get at the material and then to sort through it and to see what's valuable and what's not, and to see what's been misrepresented and what's been accurately represented.
But basically all the ones you've found, they're still available. They're actually, it's not like they've been lost and you've got...
No, I have... there may be some of the things I quote which are down to about 5 copies worldwide, but it is verifiable. I'm not producing any unique things which can't be verified. A lot of this stuff is on microfilm, and a lot of it is in digitized archives, and a lot of it is still available as hard copies.